Tampa Bay Rowdies, who have made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
Attack by goal! Oh, that is a delicious goal for Tampa Bay.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hello everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is Shane Smalls coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am back tonight on a Monday with the returning shadow boxing champion. He has come back from his illness-provoked slumber, I guess. And illness-induced slumber is probably the better word. But yes, our shadow boxing champion, Carlos Rueda, has returned to us. He is also in the Tampa region, and tonight, folks, we are going one day earlier than we usually do because the biggest game so far of the 2025 season for the Tampa Bay Rowdies is upon us this Wednesday. Before we get to all that, if I can get all the words out, we do have to talk about a game from this past week and a little bit of news related to that. And there will be one further preview to do afterwards for a league game coming up on Saturday. So it's going to be a busy show. Carlos, how are you doing tonight?
I am well. I'm fired up. I haven't stopped thinking about this game on Wednesday since it was announced however many weeks ago. We'll spend some time talking about the Birmingham game. I admittedly forgot that we even play Charleston this weekend, which is, by the way, kind of a big game.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind, but that's also happening. We'll get to that as well, and we'll give it its due. Time, but I'd be lying to you if I said I was thinking about much else other than the game on Wednesday. I'm pretty fired up. I don't know. We'll talk about how it's going to go. The odds, the underdog, the $40 million difference in transfer or in squad value according to Transfer Market. Like, we'll get into all of it, but I'm fired up, and why not us? You know, I don't care. We're already, like, because of how the MLS squads have kind of come into this tournament or not been in this tournament at all, I think some folks are forgetting that if we win this game, like, independent of the opponent, you're already into the round of 16.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the deepest we've ever been in this tournament, if I'm not mistaken. I think even in that infamous Seattle season when we beat them at home, we got knocked out in what was the round of 32 in that tournament against Portland. So keep that in mind, that just, like, there's just so much at stake with this game, and there's so many good things that can happen if we can pull out an incredible result. So we'll get to that all in a second. I'm fired up. I can't stop thinking about that game, James. It's been 24/7 running my head. I've been visualizing that win. I've been visualizing, what's the word? Manifesting the Endre Mustali 95th minute equalizer that pushes us to win in penalties. That's what I'm envisioning in my head. James, what's going on in your life before we talk about Birmingham? A really interesting game, back and forth one, and then get into the later games coming up.
It is a lot of soccer, I will say. It is definitely also a lot of soccer. I was supposed to be at the Sun game on Saturday rather than the Rowdies game, and unfortunately, as probably a lot of people listening know, the Sun game was postponed because Dallas arrived a day late.
That's crazy.
The Sun did not get the same dispensation when they had problems traveling across the coast, but that's neither here nor there because this is the Rowdies show. And the other big thing that has been taking up all of my mental bandwidth is, of course, the game on Wednesday. So, yeah, Carlos, we have to get to that eventually. And I feel like it's going to take up a lot of the portion of the show. So let's try and get through the recap as quickly as possible. It's not like there was a ton in that one to go over that's positive. There's a lot to go over,
yeah.
But we can't spend all the time in the world on this one because of the Orlando City Open Cup match, which is coming up and which we must preview afterwards. So let's just hop in. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube, any major podcast platform, all the other places. You guys already know all that. Follow us at RBLR Sports on all your social medias, whichever one you use. We are almost certainly there. If we're not, let us know and make sure to tag RBLR Sports or Eureka or something and let him know that he is failing at his job as our producer.
Ouch.
To get us on every single social media platform that is relevant to Rowdies fans. So just let him know. All right, well, let's do the quick recap. I will do the starting lineup here and then the standings, and then Carlos, I'll turn it over to you to get us going with our analysis. But Nico Campisi was in net. Pacific Nyongabire was the right back next to Robert Castellanos, Forrest Lasso, and Aaron Guillen at left back. The midfield looked like Ollie Bassett, Thomas Van Kaziel, Danny Crisostomo, and Leo Fernandez. Interesting to see him get the start. Manuel Arteaga and Rubens Pasias started up front as well. That's not too shocking based on everything we've seen so far. We took the lead in the first half. Very good work from Leo Fernandez, not only to win the penalty, but to put the penalty away. Not always something you see. Usually the person who earns the penalty does not take it, whether for personal reasons or for, I always grew up with my dad telling me that the person who earned it shouldn't take it. So you could also go with your superstitious reasons too. But Leo Fernandez did not listen to that advice. He put it in the back of the net, which was good. However, we lost the lead in the second half, and ultimately Birmingham took the lead very quickly after they had equalized. In stoppage time, though, Pacific Nyongabire was there to tie it up once again, and the game ended 2-2. Not that bad, not that good, but, you know, I would prefer a draw to a loss for sure. Our standings update. We are no longer in last in the Eastern Conference, everybody. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Let's all celebrate at least a little bit. But at the other side of this token, Miami are in a playoff position. This is the first time that Miami has been in a playoff position in about a year. I was discussing this with Kardik earlier, and even last year, we know how bad Miami was. It was very early on that they were ever in any type of playoff position, which of course they shortly lost. And then they just didn't win much after that, I think in general, but, yeah. Something to keep in mind while we're going along here. In our own standings, we haven't done this in a little while because it hasn't. I don't think we've had any earned points recently. But in our own predictions, I do need to give us an update here. I am leading with 8 points. Eureka is on 6. And Carlos right now is currently on 1. But we're in the very first show that we've recorded in May. So there's a lot of time for Carlos to make it up. And, of course, a lot of time for me to make that lead a little bit bigger. That is my goal. Out east in the USL Championship, Loudoun stayed on top with 18 points. Lou City have 17. Charleston and Detroit each have 15. Out west, San Antonio have 16 points. So East Coast is best coast, naturally. New Mexico United and Monterey Bay each have 15 points. And then there are two further teams with 12 points. So they are lagging a little bit behind. Carlos, I have done the quick recap to the best of my ability. If I left anything out, please let me know. But otherwise, I want to turn it over to you to start us with our analysis and our questions here. Basically, just get us going on how this game went. You were there, and you guys, I feel like possibly we deserved more out of this one. I think the second half also brought us back down to earth a little bit, not only because we gave up the equalizer, but then they went ahead, they being Birmingham. And we'll have to talk about how Birmingham were able to do so that quickly, but get us started with all the analysis.
I will say, and this is something I learned recently this weekend when I was down in the press room, chit-chatting with Coach Steve Coleman, who told me that he doesn't go by Stevie Coleman, and no one's called him Stevie since he was 10. So put that in your notes, James. Going forward, this is Steve Coleman. So shout out to him for listening to the podcast. If you're listening now, you had a really interesting lineup this past weekend. It was fascinating to see. Like you mentioned, James, you read through all the names. We had obviously Leo starting, which was newsworthy by itself. I think it was fascinating to see him out on the wing, kind of in like that right mid spot that we haven't seen him play. I'm not going to say ever, but in quite a long time with the Rowdies.
Not in recent memory.
Yeah. I mean, there was the before his MVP year, he was playing in that wing back kind of role that Neil Collins liked to run. And that's when we kind of unlocked his full potential in the middle of the field, in that kind of attacking mid role. And that's where he saw full Leo Fernandez come into effect. So this was fascinating. See him out on the wing, kind of in a right mid area. Like I said, something he hasn't really touched into too much since he was in that wing back role, however many years ago. And he did so rather well. I got shades of when he drew that penalty against OCB back in 2017, when he made that run between three or four Birmingham defenders and had Enzo trip him up right inside the box. very, very, very beautiful little run. Did just enough to get in there, draw that penalty, and obviously to bury it, which we know is not necessarily a given, as Leo is the one that comes to my head as our guy that missed a penalty against Naples. In the 10 people that took penalties, Leo Fernandez was not one that I was expecting to miss back in that game, but made up for it, put it away in this one. Rowdies were up 1-0. I'll give you a couple other notes on the formation that I just found interesting before we keep talking about the game as a whole. Van Kaziel in the center mid spot, fascinating. Probably a lack of depth at the area at that position right now with Cammy McPherson going down with an injury. I'm not quite sure what the timeline is on that, but Van Kaziel getting the start at the center mid spot was really, really interesting to me, noting that we have Nate Worth on the bench, obviously a younger guy with plenty of experience at this point. Van Kaziel getting the start over him was really fascinating. I think he did a pretty serviceable job, James. I don't know how much of the game you got to watch or if you watched the full game. I know you weren't at the match, but he did a pretty good job. Just not a role I would have expected Van Kaziel to be playing in at any point this season. When we bring him in as a utility guy, and that's what he is, he's a full, you know, utility belt kind of guy. I'm expecting center back, right back, wing back, maybe if we're running a three-back formation with wing backs, right? Center mid for Thomas Van Kaziel was not something I was expecting. And I think he did okay. I mean, I think he was obviously more of a defensive kind of player in this position, but he moves the ball really well for what I know him to be, which is a defensive player.
Right.
I think he did a very serviceable job there based on, like, especially taking into consideration the lack of availability of other players. Chrysostomo, fine game, nothing really to write home about, but nothing terrible either. Just a good, good game from him. And then Bassett is continuing his role out on the wing as well in like that left mid spot. So just, I'm kind of contextualizing everything here because a really unique lineup that I haven't really seen us use before personnel wise. We've had this 4-4-2 going forward for the last few games, so that's not all that surprising. But I'll give you one more piece because arguably the most influential, most crucial player in this game, Pacific Nyangabire, who had the equalizer in stoppage time. James, do you know where he started this game? And I think you do. You mentioned the lineup. But when you were reading through it, you mentioned him in the defensive line. That's fascinating. Nyangabire has played most of his role in an attacking role. He's been, most of his career, he's been either kind of like a striker or an attacking wing. For this squad, we've seen him a lot as a wing back, but never as a fullback. That was really, really weird. And he got up the field a lot. But you know what happened in this game, James, is you would see a lot of space on that side of the field because Nyangabire is the type of player that's going to go up, justifiably so, try and take on guys one-on-one, make some chances happen, put a ball into the box, and eventually score a goal. But because of that, we were leaving a lot of space in this formation. Fernandez isn't the type of guy that's going to track back at rapid speed to stop a play at this point in his career. So I think you saw a lot of a little bit of extra space that we weren't maybe accustomed to on that right side of the field because Guillen on the left is not tracking up all the way, making as many offensive plays as Nyangabire was on the right. Just an interesting tidbit. Okay, that's all the context aside. That's how we started this game. A really unique 11 with a really unique personnel kind of setup here that I think is sparked because of the weird injury situation. We have Bodley back on the bench, by the way. That was good to note. In the presser after the game, Steve Coleman said that they were looking to get Bodley into this one, but the circumstances of the game obviously didn't really call for it. They're trying to work him back from injury slowly. So playing down 2-1, maybe not necessarily the best way to do that. But if you were up 1-0 still, I could see a situation where Bodley comes in, locks down, plays a good 20 minutes or so. But in this case, did not come in. Nyangabire closes out and gets that equalizer. Okay, context setting aside, that's all done. James, this game, even with the weird, wacky personnel, started off pretty well. It was the first 15 minutes or so that were rather tiring, just kind of boring to watch if you're a casual. But as the professional journalist that you and I are, we pay close attention to the game, and I found it really interesting. We were kind of settling in with this wacky lineup, and within not too long after those first 15, you would see the Rowdies generating a lot of chances and good looks too, right? So obviously you have that that good take by Leo Fernandez to dribble into the box, get the penalty in what, the 25th minute or so. After that, you would see a great stretch of offensive soccer from the Rowdies. It was good maybe 15 minutes or so. Arteaga getting a couple good looks, ripping a shot from outside the box. I think he's still a little bit in his head given the lack of goal scoring this season, but he did get that goal last week against Miami. You saw a great ball whipped in by Neon Gabire that found Arteaga wide open at the back post, who just couldn't really generate the right, you know, power or direction on it, which went a little bit wide. But I think last season's Arteaga in form knocks that away 9 times out of 10. It was just a really, really beautiful ball from Neon Gabire that was on the money. Okay, one more that I'll mention here. Neon Gabire, pretty crucial in creating some of these chances. Dribbles between another three guys, finds Woob's top of the box, wide open. Woob's, I think, rushes the shot a little bit and sends it high over the bar. Those are really, really, really impressive looks. If you look back at the highlights, it's really fascinating to watch how it all plays out. Neon Gabire is crucial for those looks as well. He's been unlocking a new level to his game, I think, in this one that was really fun to watch. And more importantly, it unlocked a lot of space for our strikers that I just think weren't on the money in this game. And Woobs has been kind of on fire, especially in this early part of the year where we've been struggling. Woobs has been good. So a game like that from Neon Gabire going forward with a more in-form attacking duo in Arteaga and Woobs, you score a lot of goals, right? That's how you get 3.5 goals like you did against Miami last week, right? All that being said, it's good soccer. Ollie Bassett had a really good run right before halftime and shot a ball just wide that absolutely could have been a goal in a world that's ever so slightly kinder to the Rowdies. That's the first half, James. Great Rowdy soccer, great attacking soccer. And by the way, I'll mention this because there's a lot of Campisi not believers yet. Campisi kept this game 0-0 at the beginning of the game, by the way, because Birmingham had two beautiful looks that absolutely should have been goals. He made back-to-back saves to keep that game 0-0 before the Rowdies start getting comfortable and generating that high level of attacking soccer. That's your first half, James. Okay. Did I miss anything there?
I think you hit all the big stuff.
Is that an accurate summary of the first half?
Yeah.
What's the story there? That's now 3 weeks of really good first half soccer, right? We're talking about this week with Birmingham, last week with Miami. Obviously, you go up 3-0. The week before was who? Louisville. Louisville, we played some of our best. I after that episode, we said that's the best first half of soccer we played this season.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? Improvements? Playing better soccer? Offensively clicking a bit more, even without Arteaga and Woobs really scoring that much, if at all, right? That's great. Closing out games has been a little more challenging for us, right? Because why? Louisville scores 2 goals in the second half 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. Miami infamously scores 3 goals against us last week. And of course, Birmingham also scores 2 goals against us this week in a span of 6 minutes. And it's not like Birmingham changed all that much. We didn't give them a ton of chances, but it was two weird lapses in judgment. Just a couple maybe seconds of not being at our full level of focus that we've been playing with that first half. And on top of that, missing a couple early looks in the second half as well. Yeah. We could have been up another few goals. This was Arteaga that had a great look in front of the net, kind of point blank. Another great look from Pacific, by the way. Oh my God, he's having a great game. That's a fun little note because we'll get to him later on. And Ollie Bassett gets wide open on the left of the goal off of a great turnover forced by the Rowdies midfield. I think it's Leo Fernandez that finds him. He's wide open and shoots it right at the keeper, right at the Birmingham keeper, Van Okel. Easily should have been 2-0. So again, we're playing great soccer, and then we kind of get tired and lose focus. That's what scares me going forward. And we can talk about the next few games in a little bit. But there's good notes here of top-level Rowdy soccer, like the kind of soccer that wins you USL League titles. If you can play a full 90 instead of 60 minutes,
right?
We're playing 2/3 of a game. I mean, some people will tell you that this was like a first half and second half story, which it is, but I really think it's a first 60 minutes and the last 30 minutes kind of story. James, what did you see play out here in the second half that kind of led us to where we are? Because the way I saw it, it just seemed like energy, again, injuries, lack of depth at the moment. Am I missing anything? Was it a tactical thing in your opinion? Did you miss
anything? I mean, well, yeah, there are, you know, the substitutions that Birmingham made. I'm just going to pull those up real fast. In fact, it was three substitutions made exactly in the 69th minute. And then the very next minute is when Enzo Martinez, a player that nobody ever wants to see on the score sheet, probably even Birmingham fans, he scored. So they do offer something, but obviously 69th minute to 70th minute, there's not going to be enough of a change for somebody to have usually changed up the whole formation or the whole tactical setup so that they can do something else. But yeah, this one, I think, was another good example of the team running out of steam, like you said. And I think that part of that definitely comes down to the injuries here. This is the second game that we've had Lewis Hilton on the bench that he was unable to come off. And, you know, Thomas Van Kaziel, I think he actually, just like you said earlier, I think he did pretty well as the defensive midfielder. He's got the ability at least to play, I guess, any defensive role that we could ask of him. We'll see if he ends up in goalkeeper at some point over the course of this season. But, yeah, he did pretty well there, and Danny Crisostomo has mostly been partnered with a more defensive-minded midfielder over the course of this season, too. So fair enough there. But yeah, it just seems like with the games going on, and also to put this a little bit more in perspective with substitutions, Lawrence White came on in the 65th minute for Rubens Passius, and Andrew Mustali came on in the 78th minute for Leo Fernandez. Those are the only two substitutions we made. Nick Moon was also on the bench with Blake Bodley. We don't know if that's a similar situation to Lewis Hilton, where he's not getting off the bench because they're not quite there yet, and they only want to risk them in the absolute worst circumstances. I don't know. But something to keep in mind there. I think that with some number of these players returning, then we obviously get the benefit, literally, of just having those players, of course. But at the same time, we get the benefit of being able to take off people who are in the middle of a game and they're huffing and puffing and they can't quite keep up with the pace as it's gone on. You know, if Birmingham can bring on three players in the 70th minute and just play the same formation, but they have players who are a little bit more fresh and they have a little bit more energy in their legs, then that's going to put our defenders under further strain. So yeah, it's unfortunate that we see the situation. And how much of it can you put up to substitutions? How much of it can you put up to the Rowdies aren't playing well enough to maintain the situation, even if we had substitutes? I don't know. But we can say at the very least that the lack of substitutes is impacting things here. Nate Worth, as far as I'm aware, is not injured, and he just hasn't been used as much this season as he has been even last season. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind too. Maybe he just wasn't performing at the level that they needed, specifically in situations where you look at this half, we were up for 20 minutes or so, and then they scored at the 70th minute. And Nate Worth wasn't brought on then to try and help on the offensive side either. So I'm not sure exactly where all the different pieces are, not even just with injuries in this case, but I'm not sure where all the pieces are to make this team a little bit more whole. And especially as we're getting later into games, how do we keep a lead if we have one? How do we not give up a lead if we're level? And it's both of those situations went out the window in the 70th and 76th minute. So we're not doing what we need to do, of course, to maintain even 1 point was lucky to get out of this one. I think 1 point was pretty lucky. Yeah. And I hope that we're in a better headspace, at least for Wednesday.
I'm looking at like the 70th minute goal from Birmingham. Right. And I don't know. Tyler Pastor is a good player. Okay. Like he's fine. He's a very good player, but he shouldn't be able to dribble by three guys in the manner he did on that left side of the Rowdies midfield and defense in the way he did. Like it shouldn't really happen, especially against good players like the ones he dribbled by. He got by Crisostomo like nothing. Like he did a little feint and Crisostomo stuck out his leg and Pastor was gone. And then he comes up on Van Kaziel, who just kind of cuts to the right and kind of puts his body in front of Van Kaziel. And Guillen's playing a little conservative, which is probably the right move in the spot, to be fair. But Tyler Pasher sneaks in a little like dinky little pass, rinky dinky little pass that falls to Enzo, because Forrest kind of half clears it out with a slide tackle on the man he's guarding. Castellanos and Forrest are both on the same man in the box, which leaves Enzo wide open to knock in a really stupid little goal. I think they just looked tired. They looked tired, especially after that first goal. As the game progressed a little bit, that squad looked tired.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much of that 70th minute goal is a bit of exhaustion or just not playing the best defensive soccer at that moment in time. But it looked a little bit like exhaustion. And then you go to 76th minute, right, when Danny Trejo gets the goal. And it's kind of the same thing again. In this moment, Guillen's in the left back spot still. With White coming in, it changed the situation a little bit because the lineup just got all kind of wonky. It allowed Nyang'Abira to move up a little bit. I think they put Van Kaziel at the right back spot. I'm not sure. I'm kind of waffling. But it moved the formation around quite a bit when White came in. But Guillen looked so tired in this one. He's been running up and down the field. Guillen is not like a attacking fullback. He's a really good defensive player. He's played in that center back role for us for the last however many years at this point, and he's been really good at it. And I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, maybe it's an injury thing that we still have him out there playing a full 90 all the time at that left back spot. Blake Bodley isn't really a left back. I think his kind of ability gets unlocked more when he gets up the field. So maybe he can play left back better than Guillen. I don't know. My point is, Guillen doesn't really feel like he's a full 90 left back kind of guy. He's a center back. He's really good at it.
Yeah.
He got tired because he's trying to run up down the field. He's trying to be a fullback, trying to get the crosses into the box, and he's done okay at it. But he looked tired in that 76-minute goal. Ball gets by him really easily. I can't tell who makes this pass to Danny Trejo, but actually, I can tell you. It's on FUTMOM. Preston. Tabor Preston. Am I saying that first name right? Tabor Etika Preston. Gets wide open in the box, James. Like, there's literally no one around him for a good, I don't know, 5 yards.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how wide open he got. And again, I think that's just exhaustion. I think it's losing concentration for a minute, getting tired, and letting Trejo get an easy goal. But because it's not really Trejo. Trejo's just in the right spot at the right time. But Preston was one that made that happen because he was so wide open. So later on, Nyang'Abira has an incredible run. We don't really create a lot of attacking opportunities after that goal. We have like a half-chance header from Arteaga off a corner kick. But it's really Nyang'Abira that makes this game a one-point affair instead of a zero-point affair for us. Credit to Mustali, by the way, for making that pass. That's a tough pass to make. He gets his first assist for the Rowdies. I'm really happy for him. He can make an impact. It's clear. He made an impact in this one. He got that assist. But Nyang'Abira really gets 99% of the credit for this goal, obviously.
Yeah. What an
incredible run that went semi-viral on Instagram.
It also made it to the CBS Golasso Network's top 10 goals of the weekend. It wasn't the only one from the USL Championship, but very rarely do you see USL Championship goals. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, it was something special. A little cutback, a little this, a little that. Like, and he, awesome celebration. Talked to him in the pressure after the game, and he's so level-headed. Like, he doesn't really get that. Like, he just wasn't, it didn't even occur to him really that it was such a big goal. But absolute dog. If we get more of that from him, we can be a problem still. I mean, he had a great game. So he had a lot of turnovers still in that fullback spot, but he still had a good game. All that being said, James, that's the Birmingham game. And I know we said we wouldn't spend a lot of time on it, but it was worth spending a good amount of time on it because there's a lot of positives again. I said it was like an affair of the first 60 minutes versus the last 30 minutes. I think the more I've talked about this, it seems like it could be like a 70-20 affair. You know what I mean? Like, the Rowdies had, I mean, I don't know, that 60 to 70 minute mark is kind of blurry in my head, but it seems like Birmingham didn't have a ton of chances in that point either. And then we kind of just lost concentration, started getting tired. So whatever, semantics. Point is, we were losing, maybe should have lost, but Nyang'Abira salvaged a point for us and gets our first draw of the USL season. Forrest Lasso gets his 100th appearance for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, by the way, not to be overlooked, because that's an incredible achievement for all of the folks that get there. Gets to share the wall with the likes of Leo Fernandez, Jordy Hristov, Keith Savage, a lot of people on that wall. So really exciting for him. It feels like he's been here longer than than just these 100 appearances. But with the injury and then the stop in Europe, it's just great to have him back and making a home with the Rowdies. Good for him. James, anything else on this game? Is there anything to note here? Crowd of 4,500 people wasn't the best crowd we've had all season, and I hope going forward we can make that the lowest attended game of the year. 4,500 is not great. Let's fix that. But it's fine. Serviceable for like the bottom end of USL season. Anything else on this game? We talked about
it. I think that we hit on all the big things. I will say, I said this earlier when I was recording with Kartik, but talking about the penalty, it's nice that we could get something that finally went our way in terms of penalty calls. Absolutely. I think you could have been dubious, not that this was a foul, it was definitely a foul, but just whether or not it actually carried over into the box and the referee awarded a penalty. I don't care if it was in the box or not. It should be a penalty because we've had like four of those given against us and one maybe that I would agree with. You know, hometown bias aside, whatever. I'm gonna
horrible.
Yeah. I'm gonna put that in my back pocket and I'm gonna be perfectly fine with it.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I think that it's progress and injuries are still hampering us. I don't know for how much longer that will continue to be the case, but we don't have any access to the physio's room, I guess. Carlos, until we do, then we're stuck like everybody else waiting until the game day updates.
Yeah. I thought I wanted to study sports medicine for a little bit when I was in high school, and then I took biology. So don't expect me to give you any sort of updates on medical timelines. I studied political science because I couldn't do any real sciences. James, is it time to move on? Give us your man of the match. Sorry, I caught you when you're drinking water. I'll give you my man of the match first. My man of the match, James, easily Ollie Bassett for me. Maybe not easily, but he just had another great, great game. He looked like a million bucks out there. He was creating a lot of our chances in conjunction with another man of the match that you'll mention in just a little bit here. Sorry to spoil anything, but he looked fantastic. He looked so good. He was playing great soccer. He's inches away from notching a couple goals in a game, and he's ready to blow up. Let's make it happen on Wednesday. Why not?
Yeah, that's fair. I would like to see Ollie Bassett turn some of these into regular goals. But speaking of someone who turned this past weekend into a goal, Pacific Niangabire is my man of the match. I think that, you know, you watch the game and you get a feel for things. Maybe you forget stuff here and there. So first thing that I do after I watch the game and I'm getting prepared for this, if I'm not doing a whole rewatch, I'll obviously at least watch the highlights again. And Pacific Niangabire is all over that highlights package. He is all over it. Defensively, he showed up. Attacking wise, obviously, he did. And I think for that goal alone, he could be a man of the match, but it wasn't just that. It was honestly his tireless effort from the right back spot. And I think that I might have been a little bit harsh on his play as a winger when we were in episodes last week or the week before. I forget exactly which one, but I guess if anybody told him that, then he took that and he said, I'm going to make him regret ever saying that. So I guess it's the reverse of the commentator's curse, I hope. And let's get more out of this. Let's get more out of this Pacific Niangabire and see him get this turned into more call-ups for his national team and more playing time for Burundi. Would like to see that too, but it all comes with form, and he's starting to do a lot with good form here. So, all very positive.
Absolutely. Last thing I'll mention from this game, by the way, shout out to the family and their kids that said hi to Eureka and I. I love running into people. Most of the folks, if you're listening to this, like I've probably met you at some point. It's fun to run into people that I've never met before that see James and I's face and like listening to the Rowdies content every once in a while and checking us out during the week. Shout out to you guys for being at that game. Be at the game on Wednesday. I'm sorry I didn't get your names because we were running to the press room, but find me on Wednesday. I'd love to chat. You guys were awesome. And if you're ever around and we James and I have somehow not met you, like, please come find us because I love talking to people about Rowdies, about the show, and about what we do here, James. Some people, believe it or not, some people actually listen to this podcast. There's people that like the Rowdies, and there's not a lot of local coverage, and I wish there was more. But yeah, for now, you'll have to survive with James and I and the unused subs. So that's what you got at the moment. James, let's talk about a couple big ones coming up. Before we do, I'm going to throw in a shameless plug in here. Liking and subscribing is free, but if you need some new threads, some new gear, some new shirts, check us out at shop.rblrsports.com. You can support this podcast by heading over there and checking out all the cool designs that have been cooked up. Link in the description of wherever you're watching this. Use promo code COYR for 10% off, James. It's a good deal. COYR for 10% off at shop.rblrsports.com. Gear for all your Tampa Bay sports teams, the Rowdies, the Sun, who got a big win yesterday, the Bucks, the Lightning, the Rays. Who knows where the Rays are going to be, our Rays overlords, in a couple of years. So take advantage that they're still in the Tampa Bay area for now, and buy some gear. James, we're playing a team that we don't like this Wednesday. It's a game that's been either 8 years in the making or 11 years in the making, depending on who you ask. We played Orlando City B in 2017 at home in that home opener, our first game in the USL. It was an electric atmosphere. I have a picture from that game over here in this office. Sold out crowd, put the Orlando fans in that infamous cage on Bayshore next to the stadium. Bottles were thrown on the part of Orlando City fans towards Rowdies fans. Things were chanted.
Yeah, you probably didn't even need to leave that or put that part in. People would have just known who did it.
Yeah, bottles were thrown and punches might have been thrown. I don't remember if there was anything in 2017. Certainly in 2014 when four Orlando City fans got arrested for getting in the fights with security officers. Might have been two. I don't know.
Very normal fan base, very normal behavior, just front to back.
It all blends together. It's Tampa Bay versus Orlando City. And again, depending on who you ask, either 8 years in the making or 11 years in the making. We last played the senior team at home in 2014. I believe it was an Open Cup match that we lost in that one. In 2017, we played OCB at home. We won 1-0. Leo Fernandez draws a penalty and Georgie Christoph puts it away to win our first game in the USL and eventually kill Orlando City B that season. Kill them. They didn't exist for a few years and then they revived. I think they're in Next Pro or something at this point. Fun fact, they sent 9 senior team players on loan down to OCB for that game in 2017. Say what you will about our record against Orlando City senior squad, but we beat 9 out of 11 players on a senior squad in Orlando when they played us at Al Lang back in 2017. Keep that in mind for your Twitter warfare, I guess, if you want. But going forward, James, the only one that matters is this Wednesday at 7:30 when we play them at home at Al Lang Stadium in the U.S. Open Cup. Quarterfinals? Is it really quarters?
It is not. I put that in the wrong place, so please ignore that.
Not the quarterfinals. I thought I got something wrong early on, but Orlando City's not
in. No, they're playing for the quarterfinals. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah? Are we in the round of 16 right now? I'm so confused. I don't even know. We're going to have to check this at some point.
Keep talking and I'll double check.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't really thought about where we are in the tournament. I've just thought about how much I want to win this game on Wednesday and then move on. We can figure out how we win the rest of the tournament. Orlando City is not in the best of form at the moment. They have 4 draws in their last 5 games. All of those draws are 0-0 draws. So they're not scoring a ton of goals despite having the washed Colombian striker Luis Muriel up top. Paired up with a really, really talented forward in Duncan McGuire. Big East product, by the way, playing down there in Orlando at the moment. Their lineup is almost certainly going to be switched up, moved around. They've had a lot of travel in the last few weeks. Just this past weekend, they were out in Chicago. Not a short flight by any means. The week before, they were hosting Atlanta. The week before that, they were in Montreal. By the way, their only win in these last 5 was that 3-0 win against Atlanta. So they can score goals in droves, but if you look at the last 5, 4-0-0 games, including, by the way, not scoring on a 10-man Chicago squad, who was with 10 players for, 55 minutes of this game?
And a 16-year-old starting at center back.
And a 16-year-old starting at center back. So they're definitely same time, though, so we'll see. It's so hard to predict Open Cup lineups because it's really interesting to see how this Orlando City squad, like how intensely they're going to work their starting 11 after a tough week out in Chicago.
Right.
A normal starting lineup includes Pedro Gallese in net, Peruvian national, Alex Freeman, Rodrigo Schlegel, I don't know, Robin Jansen, and Devin Brekalo in the back line. In the midfield, you can see a lot of Marco Pasalic, Cesar Araujo, Kyle Smith, and Ivan Angulo behind Luis Muriel, like I said, the Colombian striker, Colombian national team guy, and Duncan Maguire, who kind of stormed the MLS stage. That's not the right word. Took the MLS stage by storm, had a great rookie year, if I'm not mistaken, whenever that was, and has kind of just settled in nicely into the starting 11 with Orlando. My prediction lineup-wise is that I would be shocked to see Gallese get the start. I feel like with all these MLS squads, you see a lot of getting the backup keepers minutes with the Open Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, you've even seen that with the Rowdies. We gave Bondre the cup games. I'm curious to see if he gets this cup game. I'm not quite sure I would love that move because it is a cup game, but it's also a really, really big game against an opponent that's in a higher level. So we'll see about that. So I'd be shocked if we see Gallese in net for Orlando. I think, like I said, we'll have a lot of rotation because they've been doing quite a bit of travel, including just this past Saturday all the way up in Chicago, Illinois. Pasalic has 5 goals. Muriel and Martin Ojeda have 4 goals, and Ojeda has 4 assists. So there's a lot of external factors here, James. Like I've said, you got this travel factor. You've got squad rotation. I think this game is going to be really fascinating. James, you use the word miracle in terms of what it's going to take for us to get a win here. I think I might be a little more optimistic as I tend to be. This game's going to be fascinating, truly. On the field, maybe even more so off the field. Like I said, this game hasn't happened at Al Ahly in 8 or 11 years. It's been quite a while. We haven't beaten this Orlando senior squad in a competitive match. We beat that B team twice in that USL season back in 2017, which again had a lot of loanees from their top squad, but not the point. This team doesn't respect whoever is listening to this podcast. This Orlando City squad doesn't really care about the Rowdies, obviously, right? It's an MLS squad with a transfer market value that is upwards of $48.5 million is what Transfer Market says their squad's worth. The Rowdies have a Transfer Market squad value of $4.8 million. So do the math there. It's almost 10 times the Transfer Market squad value. Transfer Market's not super accurate for USL stuff, to be fair, but it's a vague idea of kind of what you're working with in terms of
the money. If it's not worth 10 times more, it's very close. Going to be close. It's going to be close to 9 times or 8 times more. Sure. And even if you look at that, that's a huge disparity in money. So
absolutely. Absolutely. You're talking about a really, really big disparity here in terms of just money as a club, obviously.
Yeah.
With the roster rotation, I think we could see, a starting 11 that's a little bit more parity in terms of transfer market squad value, right? I think you'll see a lot of young guys get minutes for Orlando, but the danger there, James, is they have all those big money guys kind of just sitting on the bench waiting to come in. So this game will be fascinating. I think if you have a chance, it'll be kind of getting a really, really quick start and then holding on to what lead you may or may not accrue as the, big money guys come into the game and settle in, or maybe they come out swinging with the big money guys and they're tired, right? I think there's a path to win this game.
Yeah.
Orlando City doesn't score a lot of goals, right? Our back line struggles to play a full 90, as we've seen, right? So what does that mean? To me, it sounds like you have to get, like I said, a quick start, score early, and hold on, right? Maybe you get a rapid draw, play for a penalty shootout at some point, and then you win in penalties because Nico Campisi has a game of his life. I don't know. I'm always optimistic. I think there's always a path to victory, no matter who you put ahead of us on the field. You've seen really bright moments of brilliance from this Rowdy squad. But again, if you're listening to this podcast, or you're James and I, Orlando City, their fans, like their coach, the players and coach probably don't know who the Rowdies are, if we're being honest. Their fans, if they know who the Rowdies are, don't respect you. If you're listening to this right now, the Orlando City squad that's coming to play here and their fans, they do not respect you. So my question, James, is what are you listening going to do about it? Because we know sometimes the players, the Rowdy squad, listen to this podcast every once in a while, James. We know the coach, Steve Coleman, listens to the podcast.
Not Stevie.
What are you going to do about that? How much do you care about this club, James? How much do you care about this club as a fan, as a player, as a coach? What does it mean to you? Even if you've never been around for an Orlando City game, you know what this game means. You know what it could mean if you make it to the next round. What are you willing to do on the field? Hold on to your scarves if you're a fan. Like, do not, like, these, we've seen what Orlando City fans do. You know, they'll take a flag, they'll take a banner, right? They'll take your scarf if you come across them.
Take a hat off your head.
They'll take a hat off your head. Hold on to your stuff, right? Protect your colors. That's why you're going to the game on Wednesday, is to root for the Rowdies and make sure you're protecting that green and gold on your shirt, right? I'm wearing the Ralph's Mob gear, right? It's green and black, but you get the point. You have to have the game of your life on the field, and I think you can do it. And if you're in the stands, even if we go out there and lose, I don't know. I don't want to get blown out. If you go out there and lose, that's fine. It happens. But I don't want to lose in the stands, James. That's why I said on the Discord with the Ralph's Mob guys earlier. I don't want to lose in the stands. Go to the game. Bring your friends. Bring your family. Most importantly, like, be as loud as you've ever been at a game. Sing all the songs. Chant all the chants. Make sure these Orlando City fans that are coming and thinking they're going to take over the stadium, make sure they know what they're not. They're not welcome here, James. This isn't a Charleston Battery rivalry when they come into town and we share a beer, right? These people don't respect you. And if that's the case, reciprocate that same energy, right? Like, this is my call to arms. Be as loud as possible. Make sure they know that even if they win, this isn't their stadium. They don't own Tampa. Even if they're the only MLS squad or the MLS club in the Central Florida region, like, this isn't their territory. And I think sometimes people forget that. Go to this game. We can lose 5-0 for all I care. But if you're going to be in the stands, I need you to be as loud as you've ever been in your life. Bring a friend. Bring your Rowdies fan friend that hasn't come in a year or two. Like, this is the game where we kind of have to push out ourselves, because the Rowdies ticket office might not push it as much as, you know, a Saturday game or a game with fireworks or something. You just have to be there, be loud, and make it happen. Who knows, James? It's the magic of the cup. Anything can happen on the field. And like I said, I think there's a path to victory. But more important than the path on the field, like I said, is what happens in the stands. Keep it clean. Don't get baited into a fight with these dudes. They're absolute losers, and they love to talk a lot of smack on Twitter, but they won't do anything unless you get baited into it. But be loud and make sure they know that this isn't like an extension of Orlando City territory or something. So, James, that's my call to arms. I hope it's riled someone up to go, you know, grab one of their friends that hasn't been to a game in a little bit and make it out and be loud. But should we talk about how this game will actually go on the field?
Well, I just want to say real fast before we jump into our predictions here, I think that your call to arms is really good for not only the hype that, you know, people who are going are probably already going to feel, but yes, we need to get as many people here as possible, and they need to be wearing the colors and chanting and all the stuff that Carlos just said, because this 2025 was when we started going through the season for this podcast, the hype season. This was RBLR Rowdy's hype. I know that that's taken a couple of hits so far, but the hype train is still on, and it is most specifically running at full tilt for this game on Wednesday night. This is the biggest game that we are going to have in 2025 until and unless we get into the playoffs or, you know, farther into a cup game. Let's say maybe past this one, maybe deeper in the Jägermeister Cup. All of those are very far off in the distance. So if we're taking the very next game, that is a possible one that could be where we need to land the hype train, it is this one. You have got to get out. Remember our ticket competition. Bring somebody new for the first time. If this is one where you think that this is the perfect chance to get somebody who's loud, who's never been out, do that. And also bring three of their friends. Bring as many people as you can and be as loud as possible for this game. This is still RBLR Rowdy's hype, and it is especially so to try to beat Orlando City. I said in my little written preview that Carlos read through that this was a miracle for us to win this one. And it's not just because of the disparity in money. It's also because our current form. It's also because our current injuries. There are lots of problems that are getting in the way. But what I wouldn't give to see us beat Orlando City, what I wouldn't give to see us beat them and have all of those fans who suck go home and they're crying the whole time or whatever they do. Maybe they get so drunk at the bar that they can't leave and then they just fall asleep in the streets.
No, get them out. Get them out of school. I don't want them here. I don't want them here.
Either way, we need to give them something to go home and cry about. All right? Let's make it this game. Let's make it this game. This is the one to get hype about.
What better way to turn around a season, by the way? Can you imagine the story at the end of the year when we inevitably lift the USL Championship and maybe even the Open Cup and the Jägermeister Cup and win it all? And you point to a moment where you turn around the season. Why not this game? Why not? Exactly. Why not? I mean, the odds aren't in your favor, but there's been bigger upsets in sports and bigger upsets in this tournament all the time. Like, all the time. There's upsets in this tournament all the time. Why not this one? And we're overdue for an Open Cup win, regardless of who it is against. We've been due for one against Dallas and Houston in the last couple of years. We've been robbed of, you know, with goalkeeper performances and wonder goals. We've been robbed of advancing to the next round past an MLS squad in the last couple of seasons. I think we're well overdue for one, and I would like it to be against this squad, James. All that being said, I'm always going to be optimistic, and I'll predict. Would we jump into predictions?
Go for it.
I think we grab an early lead in this one. We draw. Okay. I think we draw. We draw 1-1. And then Endre Mustali gets the game winner in overtime. When everyone's tired, Endre gives the burst of youth energy. And we win in overtime off of some crazy wonder goal that he pulls off. So we win 2-1 with a goal in extra time. Yeah, I think truly, like, if we're you know, moving away from sentimental and, you know, emotional and appealing to the intensity of this rivalry and just what it means to be like a fan, right, of this club, moving away from that, we're just talking about what's on the field. Like I said, the path to win this game is an early goal or goals. I wouldn't mind a couple early goals. And then playing the best defense of your life. I don't see a world where we score a goal, like a lot of goals in the 75th minute or later. I think that's the path to win this game. So keep that in mind. Anything can happen. It's the magic of the cup. Why not win by like five? I don't care. Let's make it happen. James, that's my prediction. What about you?
All right. Well, I have actually followed suit with Eureka. In fact, I am going with a 2-2 draw with a win on penalties, and Eureka went with a 1-1 draw with a win on penalties. We did that before against Naples, so it's not an impossibility. I don't know how good it would be for the hearts of all the Rowdies fans in the stands, but either way, I would still like to see us win, and I think that penalties is probably the best way, not the best way, but the easiest way that we do that, because penalties aren't a crapshoot, but they are a lot more open, certainly. So I think a 2-2 draw is something that we can do against this team. You have pointed out they have had trouble scoring. They've also been relatively good defensively for the most part.
That's true.
At the same time, all of that goes out the window in a cup game. Anything can happen, not just because it's wild, but players, you know, let's just be real for 2 seconds. People approach situations differently depending on what's in the back of their head, and maybe they can get out of what's in the back of their head, but a lot of times they can't. And if you're a player from an MLS team and you're playing a USL Championship team, one that isn't in good form, tons of injuries, all the issues that Rowdies fans know about even better than Orlando City does. You're going to come into this game maybe with a little bit of an attitude. Maybe you're looking down your nose and you see the Rowdies there and you're like, whatever, we'll get out of this. No,
they don't respect you. They don't respect you.
Exactly.
The players, so this team doesn't respect you. Their fans don't respect you. James, that's a good point. Like I said at the beginning of this, what are you going to do about it on right. the field? What are you going to do about it off the field? That's exactly. my question to you and my call to arms.
There we go. RBLR hype. What are you going to do about Orlando City's disrespect? I think actually that's Eureka. We should just put that as the RBLR slogan for the next two or three days.
What are you going to do about it? Like, look, it's people forget that you have a lot of control about how things go, especially in a USL stadium where the capacity is 7,000 people. You bringing a few extra friends, you bringing a few of their friends and being as loud as possible, drowning out Orlando City chants, it makes a huge difference. And I think we've seen in the past reflect on the field. Players react to the energy that fans are putting out there. Be loud, get behind the squad, and why not turn the season around with a win against this team?
Exactly.
Unlikely is what you'll see on paper, sure, but it's the Cup, James. Anything happens.
Yep. And we're going to hope for the most unlikely of wins here for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Absolutely. All right, let's do one more quick preview. And then we'll get you guys out of here. But on Saturday, we need to talk about a game against Charleston Battery. We will play them at 7:30, like I said, on Saturday. And I'm not, 3 points are important. We got to make the playoffs. We got to try and make a run in the USL Championship. But it's going to be the game after the biggest game. So to be perfectly fair, I really think that this one is a lot less, there's a lot less pressure. I'll say that if we can beat Charleston, fantastic. And if we don't, it's all, the only thing that'll impact my mood then will be what happened versus Orlando City. So let's get into this one a little bit more while we are talking about it. I suppose there's still something to talk about with the Battery game.
There is.
They're in much better form at the moment, although it should be noted they travel for their Open Cup game and they will be going up to DC. They'll probably actually end up playing Connor Antley and maybe even a goalkeeper who played with the Rowdies. I don't know, but Connor Antley is probably going to be involved. Theirs is on Tuesday, so they have a little bit less to worry about with the travel, but then they'll also have to travel to Florida. So not a ton of time in between, obviously. Their lineup may fluctuate again because of the Open Cup. It's likely that they will go all out while DC might do whatever they want. So are they going to put in their reserves for Saturday? We'll just see. With that in mind, though, I'm going to go through their most likely lineup if it's just a regular USL Championship game. Again, might not be the case because of the Open Cup. In net, Luis Samudio has sat behind Langston Blackstock, Leland Archer, Joey Akpunonu, and Nanan Husu across the back. There is a midfield of Aaron Malloy and Chris Allen behind Juan David Torres, MD Myers, and Arturo Rodriguez up top. Cal Jennings is likely to start. Keep that in mind. He has 6 goals so far, 3 goals and 4 assists for Juan David Torres, who was the other player I mentioned earlier. The Pacific Neongabire made the CBS Golazo Network top 10 goals of the weekend. The other USL Championship player to do that was Juan David Torres with an Olympico. Pretty wild. Pretty wild. Don't expect him to do that against us. That is a, ask Lionel Messi, that is a once in a lifetime type of thing, because not even Messi has done that. The one goal, the one type of goal that Messi has not scored. Our best hope for this game, in my opinion, is likely that with some level of tiredness due to their travel, maybe there will be a dip in form and maybe they will play some reserves. Maybe that's how we get a good result out of this one. I think that a draw is the most likely one, and I guess I'll give away my prediction with that. But yeah, Charleston in the Open Cup is going to be a lot more intense than Charleston right after the Open Cup. I'm pretty certain that'll be the case. Carlos, do you have anything else to add to our Charleston Battery preview?
No. Like you said, my mood will be determined by the game on Wednesday. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind a win against Charleston. Let's say I think Steve has a pretty good idea of how much and how important this game is on Wednesday. And I think our lack of depth is going to really show its ugly head on Saturday, because we're probably going to go all out on Wednesday. I think we're going to go all out on Wednesday, whoever that is, right? You're going to have a really strong starting 11. You're going to, I think, I would hope, put out your best 11. And then have come what will on Saturday, right? And what will come is, I think, a 1-1 draw. We're going to be drained, though. I mean, think about your strikers. It's just, it's Arteaga, Woobs, and Endry. There's a world where this game goes into overtime. As you said, it might be the clearest, most direct path to a victory or moving on, maybe not, you know, regulation victory. But Eureka makes a good point, by the way, in our private chat, that maybe some players make their way back for Saturday as well from injury. I think the guys are going to be tired already on Wednesday getting to this game from Saturday, from this past weekend's game, a really intense, you know, full 90 chaotic matchup.
And some good heat.
Yeah. And in actual, we only made 2 subs, right? So what does that tell you about where we are for Wednesday and Saturday? I think we're just going to be really tired. So I think we're going to pull off a draw. I'm hoping we can get a win. If we, you know, independent of what happens Wednesday, I would love a win. But yeah, I mean, look, if you're listening to this, Steve, and I don't know, I don't want to say I speak for everyone in the Rowdies fan base, but for what it's worth, I think you go all out on Wednesday and then just have come what will on Saturday.
Yeah.
Play the kids. I really don't care what happens Saturday if you can get the win on Wednesday. Or play the best game of your life, right? Play the kids on Saturday.
At the very least, play the best game of your life.
Yeah. And then have come what will on Saturday, like you said. Like I said. So that's that. Let's figure it out next week when we've played 2 games and hopefully come up with 2 incredible results. I think the storyline on Saturday would be fascinating if we can play the kids and come out with a really good win against Charleston, against, you know, former Rowdy Cal Jennings at home. It'll be his first game coming back. So that'll be an interesting little storyline as well to keep in mind. I'm sure the Facebook crowd will have a blast when he inevitably scores a goal on us and says, "Oh, why didn't we re-sign Cal Jennings? Why didn't?" Yeah, I didn't. Shut up. We're done. We're past that. All right, it's done. Right. We are where we are, and we're going to make do with what we have, James. That's all you can do.
I am joining you in a draw column for this one, 0-0 for me, and Eureka is being the optimist, as it turns out, with a 2-1 win prediction. So keep that in mind. Also, you will see our predictions the day of the game or the day before. I don't remember exactly when they always go out, but it will be on your social medias if you want to add your own predictions. We would love to see that. And help us out here. Let's get into the extra time now that we have talked about this one, talked about 2 previews to death, I suppose. But yes. Fort Lauderdale United, who have a women's team in the USL Super League, they are joining on the men's professional side and will join the USL League One in 2026. So USL League One in 2026 is supposed to be, at least in the state of Florida, FC Naples, Sarasota Paradise, and Fort Lauderdale United. The USL Championship in 2026 is supposed to be Tampa Bay Rowdies, Miami FC, who I hope by then will have moved to Homestead, and possibly Sporting Jacksonville. I believe that is up in the air on the men's side specifically.
Yeah.
Then you look at the USL Super League, and in 2026, or I guess it would be 2025 to 2026 because they do the other calendar, it should be Fort Lauderdale United, Tampa Bay Sun, and Sporting Jacks. Honestly, the state's doing pretty well in terms of expansion. I guess that was something that we have to keep in mind. Not probably until we get to next year's Jägermeister Cup, but still something to remember. Good enough for Fort Lauderdale, I suppose.
I hope they do better than the Strikers. I'm sure the owners are more competent. But I think like the market, like the Fort Lauderdale sports market, has a lot to prove before I'm confident in the long-term success and viability of this club, both on the men's and women's side, if I'm being honest. Like I'm not sure how well this will go. I've been interested in USL's expansion strategy, and sometimes, like, you know, they kind of throw things at the wall and see what works. And moving on to my next point, by the way, it kind of worked in Portland, by the way. Like, you wouldn't think Portland, Maine is a great soccer market, and all of a sudden they're selling out their 5,000 to 6,000 person stadium that they're working with at the moment for their home opener. Great job over there. It's a great crowd. Supporters are very vibrant, very colorful, very active. Rhode Island FC Would you have expected Providence, Rhode Island to be a great soccer market? I think more so than Portland, Maine. They sold out 10,000 plus person soccer specific stadium they just opened this past weekend. Good for them. I'm not sure what the strategy is in Fort Lauderdale with the already flaky South Florida, Miami fan bases that exist for their sports teams down there. I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'm sure the flight 19ers from, you know, the old Strikers days maybe are happy about having a Fort Lauderdale team back in their neighborhood. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think they have a lot to prove before I'm confident in the success. Like I said, the long-term viability of the team there. But other than that, I think like a Jacksonville has a higher likelihood of survival maybe.
Yeah.
They have a good sports crowd over there. Although I know the Jacksonville Armada crowd is not particularly happy about their existence, which I don't know how big a voice that is in that neck of the woods, but there's a lot of interesting things happening in Florida soccer, James. I think, like you said, the state is rather vibrant in the next few years, so enjoy it. We'll see what happens with Sarasota, how well they do. They drew a good crowd for their Open Cup game that you were at, if I'm not mistaken, James, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what a full season of that looks like, right? Naples is drawing crowds down there in Southwest Florida. Like, we'll be down there on the 4th of July. I will be there. James, are you going to be down there?
Yep.
Absolutely. The RBLR crowd's going to be down there. And if you're listening to this, you should make plans to get down there too and continue to establish ourselves as the marquee club of, you know, all Florida, but especially in this case, West Florida. So, James, interesting things happening in the world of USL. Like I said, Rhode Island getting a great crowd for their home opener in their new state. Not home opener, but their first game in the new soccer-specific stadium.
Yep.
Portland getting a great crowd for their home opener. Great things happening. Vibrant Florida soccer scene. The future's bright, I guess. Let's see.
Future's bright. Can't complain about that. Also, none of it matters because Wednesday is what matters. If you are listening to this podcast and for some reason – or if you were listening to this podcast and for some reason you were an Orlando fan, just tune out. I don't know why you're here anyway.
I don't know but how you're
if you're the normal person that's listening to this podcast or watching this stream, well, however you would normally come to this, but as long as you are not one of those purple people, then please come down on Wednesday to Al Lang Stadium in downtown St. Pete and please cheer as loud as you can for the Tampa Bay Rowdies against Orlando City. That is the big thing that we need to leave everybody with. Carlos, yeah. I'm going to ask you to say it one more time.
What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And I'm telling you, like we said, we know Coach Steve listens to this podcast. We know that some of the players stumble across it. You're going to have to play the game of your life out there. I do not give a single bleeping anything about what's happened in the last few games. And I think, again, I'm not speaking for everyone, but I think a lot of folks in this fan base might share that sentiment. I would trade the rest of the season for this win. So play the game of your life. If you're listening to this as a fan, cheer as loud as you ever have. Go to the game and bring everybody you know. And like, it's a Wednesday game, I know. And I know a lot of folks just don't even know what this game, you know, means if you're kind of just downtown St. Peter and you kind of stumble across the Rowdies every weekend. So do your part, right? Do your part, do your best to bring the folks you know. And then at the end of the day, all you can, you know, be left with is knowing that you did what you could, right? We can't play the game on the field. I wish I could. You know, I played fullback for my youth soccer days and I was pretty good at it. It's never good enough to be a pro, right? We can't play the game, but we can do the small part we can in the stands, being loud, bringing people you know, right? And turning folks into longtime Rowdies fans. I know there's some people that were at that last 2014 game against Orlando and stuck around, and that was our first game, and they became longtime Rowdies fans. Shout out JD. I know you specifically are the example I have in my head. Make longtime Rowdies fans out of this game, you know? Let's make it happen. So be there, be proud, be loud, and no matter what happens on the field, we're not losing the stands, James. We're not doing it.
There we go. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate when you do. Please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, anywhere. We are there at RBLR Sports. I'm mostly on Twitter at RBLR James K. You can use the hashtag AskRBLR, or you can reach Carlos on Twitter at
CarlosTPA10 on Twitter.
There we go. Like and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can get the full experience on YouTube. If you would just prefer to listen, no problem. We are on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, Apple, yes, and Google Podcasts, everywhere you can find us. Come on, you rowdies. Let's beat Orlando.
Come on, you rowdies, James.
They have it. Come on.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.